Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 26 of the Solopreneur Grind podcast. I am here with Jeff Tippett. Jeff, really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Hi Josh, thanks for allowing me to be part of your conversation here. I'm honored.
Awesome. Really looking forward to it, Jeff. Ever since I watched your intro video on your website, I said, you know what, this is going to be a good episode. But for those who haven't seen the website or heard about you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started?
Absolutely. Well, I would go back to my childhood, and especially given your audience, to say that I have entrepreneurship in my DNA. I remember as a kid starting what I thought was a company that I called Snoopy's Yard Club, and I would go out and get contracts to mow and rake my neighbor's yards. But then I took it a step further. I'd hire my friends to do the work so I could go get new contracts. So it's been part of my background. I've started a couple of nonprofits. In 2014, I launched Targeted Persuasion to be a political consultancy. It was, I launched at the worst time possible. Josh, honestly, it was October of an election year before a November election here in the States. And surprisingly enough, I landed a half dozen clients. And then within the first quarter of my company's existence, I landed my first international client, this little company based out of California called Airbnb. And it really helped move my company forward. Now I spend about 75% of my time speaking professionally, stages across the globe, and doing the work surrounding that. And then about 25% of my time, I still do client strategy and client interaction for my firm.
Very cool. There's lots to dig into here. My first question is, where did you come up with the idea for that first company name?
Because I was a Peanuts fan. And so and I wouldn't, and in fact, I even made yard signs myself. I cut them out of construction paper and put them on some like a hard surface. So of course, the first time it rained, the whole thing fell apart. But still, man, I was out there. I was building my company.
That's really great. I do want to ask one more question about that, which is, you know, you hear about the people who, like you said, have entrepreneurship ingrained in them from the start. And it's awesome. You know, they might go out and try and get sales like you did, but it seems like you went even that extra step at a young age of outsourcing the labor. Did that just come naturally? Did someone recommend that to you? Did you read a newspaper or something?
No, it was just like, there's really no thought process behind it. It was really just a chance for me to go get more contracts. So I looked at this and thought, well, right. I'm limited to the number of contracts I can do. I want more contracts. I want to make more money.
Right. That's amazing. So Jeff, can we start, when you finished school, when you entered the quote unquote, you know, workforce, or you became a working professional, or, you know, full time, you had to find a job. What was that first, you know, 6 months like? What were you doing?
So I went to graduate school at East Carolina University, completed a master's degree in English. So I come from a communications background. I also have a degree in music. So the first part of my career, I was actually using my undergraduate degree. I did teach for a while I was in graduate school. I taught freshman comp. But outside of that, I stayed in my minor area there for a while. And worked within inside of existing organizations.
Right. And then what was it that sort of catapulted you into entrepreneurship?
Well, I would say that like even while I was in existing companies and existing organizations, I was the entrepreneur. So I was always seeking to start something new. So sometimes like, you know, we feel like that we can only be entrepreneurs and be out on our own, where we can get a lot of practice and we can learn a lot of lessons just by raising our hand in the organization where we happen to be right now and test some ideas and see how they fly, see how they work, and also test our own skill sets and our, you know, our mental mindset as well. So I think we can operate as an entrepreneur inside of companies, but then we can also then, you know, build up what it takes. And for me, it became this level of frustration. Like, I just wanted to do what I wanted to do. I wanted to create the life that I wanted to create, and I wanted to be able to help the types of people that I wanted to help. And I found I could not do that when I had someone else calling all of my shots.
Yeah, that's such a great point, Jeff, and one that I think a lot of us probably overlook, which is the fact that you know, even if you're in a job, you're not happy, you're working within a company, the fact that you can give entrepreneurship a try on someone else's dime, right? Because you can test out those new ideas, learn about management, get that leadership experience, marketing, all while working within another company, and then take that leap on your own, which, as you know,
is not so easy, right? Especially the first time you do it.
Absolutely. I think it's being an entrepreneur is a great way to test some ideas, test yourself. But then you also have, when you're existing companies, you have the support of like the CPA and the professionals all around you to help you there, you know, move things forward. And then there's also the side hustle. It's another wonderful way to enter in. And I had the ideas, the foundations for the company that I was beginning to, and I was staying in the same space, beginning to float and, you know, move through some of these ideas when the time became right to pull the trigger. I was extremely nervous, Josh, when I launched out. You know, I was just thinking month to month, like, how do I make it? How do I keep feeding the kids and pay the mortgage?
Right.
But it worked.
So can you talk a little bit about that buildup to when you finally decided to quit the 9-to-5 life?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did all of the back end work to be ready to go. I had did all the work with the Secretary of State's office. I found a CPA. I had my website up and running. I figured out exactly what I wanted to do. And again, I launched to do political work. And the niche area that I was working in is developing online work, digital work for political clients. Now, I got in and got started, and that did change. It began to migrate as I really began to start working with people and began to have a better feel for who I was as a person and what made me happy and what the market needed as well.
Right. And can you talk a little bit about it? It sounded like you, one of probably the many reasons for your success is you had done all this planning. You had a pretty defined niche picked out. And obviously that's going to change a little bit, especially at the beginning. But how did you pick that initial idea? Or maybe another way to ask this question is, for someone who's working a 9-to-5 and they know they want to get out of it and start something on their own, what can they do to try and find that idea that they will be interested in and, you know, the market will pay for?
My experience, the way that it happened for me was that just doing my normal everyday work, just living my life, what I began to see was that people in our state, and my target when I began the company was just within the state of North Carolina, the people in the state of North Carolina, political figures, were most often finding a firm out of D.C., to run their digital campaigns and run the digital space. And I began to see here that, well, maybe they would respond better if they had a local person that could handle everything that a company out of DC could handle, but they could have a person face-to-face they could talk with, they could have someone who understands North Carolina, understands the constituent space and the demographics of our state to create better results for them.
Right, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so take us through the first few steps. Let's say someone has that idea, and they have zero business experience, right? They weren't selling and outsourcing in high school. Maybe they didn't get a degree in business or anything like that. What would you say are some of the beginning steps that someone could take, maybe as a side hustle before they quit their main job, and like you did, plan out the back end before taking that full dive?
So I continued to build relationships, and that was part of my existing job. So that was part of the success. Like, as I said, I put the shingle out and I had a half dozen clients the first week of my company's existence. These are people that I already knew. I had established relationships. And I think part of, if we want to call it success, of launching my company was staying true to like who I was and what people knew that I loved to do and working the relationships that I had invested so much time to build up from the beginning. All of my first clients were people that I already knew.
Right. That sounds like you kind of did it by the book and with some great results. Can you talk to us, Jeff? I'm just a little curious about the industry in general, right? It sounds so interesting, and I definitely want to get into your speaking and your persuasion. I'm so interested in that aspect as a fan of copywriting and sales writing. But can you just give us a little more background on exactly what it's like working in that industry? I mean, we all know kind of about politics, but in terms of being that ingrained in that industry and doing something so important, which is the marketing for them, I'm just interested on a personal level to hear more about what that was like and what your business was like.
So it was a lot of fun up front, launching out, really helping some great clients, many of them win elections and be part of that process. But one of the things that I learned, and I think this is just part of the entrepreneurial journey, is as I got moving in this space and really got head deep into it, only working with political clients, one of the things that I learned early on was just how dark and how dirty this space is. And there was a misalignment for me as I got into this. So as I started working as personally, like, my background is as a happy person. Like, I find my greatest joy in helping other people get where they want to go. That's why I love speaking. I can instill ideas that could help them get to the next place. What I found on the political side was, like, we had to do so much dirty work. You know, we would commission OPA research. We would release stories to the media that, you know, honestly, Josh, could destroy families. And it was so dark and so dirty that I just couldn't. The values didn't align. However, I was able to make a shift in this and do similar work, but to do things that made me happy and that really aligned with who I was. And that became through my relationship with Airbnb, when I could work on the policy side, I could work on the public affairs side of things, and use my marketing background to build grassroots support to help advance policy prescriptions or to stop policies from moving forward. That allowed me to bring in, like, all of my work with public relations, with the media, with digital, with elected officials, with lobbyists. Everything began to align.
Right, and I think that speaks so much to what you end up seeing to be the kind of natural life cycle of a lot of companies early on, especially small ones, where people like you and I are jumping from corporate, and you have a good idea of where to start. And even if it works well, it takes you a little bit to find that niche that you get comfortable in. Can you expand a little bit more on that transition, right? Because you're going from doing this, politician-heavy type work around elections. How did you make that transition to more of the private side? And I mean, landing a company like Airbnb, were they in their infancy at that time?
No, they were doing quite well. The way that whole story moved forward through working with an elected official, they were having some issues here in the state of North Carolina. And this elected official reached out to me and said, "Hey, Jeff, would you build grassroots support to help us fix this problem that's going on here in the state?" This person was very supportive of short-term rental space. And so I was like, "It sounds like a lot of fun." Absolutely. So, and this is a great entrepreneurial lesson as well. I didn't wait for Airbnb to hire me. So under the thought that happened from this one elected official that said, "Jeff, if you would build some grassroots support here to help me in what I'm trying to do, I think we can have a lot of fun. You can do great work here." I just jumped in. There was no contract. There was no one saying, "Here's your paycheck." I saw a need. I jumped in. I started working on this, and I reached out to Airbnb and said, "Hey, here's what I'm working on. I need a lobbyist to come into town as we do this big town hall. We've got media coming. We've got elected officials coming. I need someone. I need a lobbyist to come in from Airbnb." So absolutely, they sent me a lobbyist in. I built a great relationship with him. And I guess, 2 weeks after that whole town hall that I created for to support this policy, Airbnb reached back out to me and said, "Jeff, we've never seen anyone do anything like this. This was amazing. We want to hire you to work in the state for us."
Right. That's really incredible. And it sounds like another example of just, you didn't read it in a textbook. You know, you hadn't really seen it done before. It just kind of needed to be done, and you took action, right? I mean, I think you would be more than willing to agree, Jeff. I think most entrepreneurs would, in saying that action is so much more important than, well, I don't want to say so much more important, but learning is very important. Action is the key, right? Because without that, then you'll be sitting in your basement for a while.
Get moving. I mean, I preach that all the time, and to clients as well. Get moving, get started, figure out what can I do. And in my case, again, Airbnb didn't pay me for that. Eventually they did, and I did quite well working with Airbnb. But just get moving. Find opportunities where you can solve an existing problem. And what happened was people began to see that. And then after my Airbnb contract ended, and we wrapped up the work there, someone from the other side of the aisle on that reached out to me based upon my work. And it was another 2-year contract. It was an amazing contract that I worked. So it continues to flow, but get moving. Get some action. You don't have to wait for a check. You don't have to wait for someone to pay you. Find a problem, fix it. Get your name out there. Let people see what you can do.
Right. That's such great actionable advice. Really cool, Jeff. So can you take us through maybe to, like, how do things progress from there? How did you get into speaking? How did you, you know, get into persuasion? I'm excited to spend a decent portion on persuasion because I find it so interesting. But can you take us to the next step in your story?
Absolutely. So a couple of things merged here and aligned to really help me better figure out exactly what is it exactly that I want to do. And I think it's part of the process of even finding ourselves that it may take us a little bit of time in this journey to really figure it all out. As I mentioned, I come from a communications background, but one of the things that I began to notice with like PR firms and advertising firms and marketing firms, most often, especially in the PR space, what people are concerned about is disseminating information, getting information out there to users. And I began to look at that and think, well, you know what? This is just part of it. This isn't the whole equation. It's not just about getting information out to people. We have got to be able to persuade people to take the action that we want them to take. And that was part of the journey, along with aligning something totally unexpected in my life that I would say the universe just dropped into my lap. And that was adopting a baby from the country of Haiti during a time when the country was falling apart and collapsing. And it was through this journey that I really began to understand what persuasion is all about, and also what manipulation is about too, and how they differ.
Right. I need to ask about that. I can't just leave you there. So how did that even come about, right? We're talking about business, you're building businesses, your career. How does the adopting the baby come into the picture?
My life was perfect, Josh. I didn't need anything else in my life. I had two kids, a picket fence, and a Dalmatian. My life was perfect. My father went to Haiti to do humanitarian relief and came back and told me the story of a ninth grader that he was his interpreter. And he built this relationship over his two-week journey there in Haiti, so much so that she was very open to share with him the greatest struggle of her life, which was this. As a ninth grader, she became pregnant, and her school gave her a choice. They said, you can get rid of your baby, or you can stay in school, but you need to figure this out. Right, Josh? Like, how does a person even make a decision like that? So with much consideration, and I'm quite sure much tears as well, she came to the conclusion that it would be best for her to find a home for her baby and then continue schooling herself so she could get her high school diploma to give herself her best opportunity and at the same time give her baby the very best opportunity possible. So that's how this whole story began.
Right. So how does that lead to the next step? Because this is just so intriguing, Jeff. You're the one who decides to adopt her baby?
I decided when my father came back, told me this story, you know, I just knew immediately that I was the one to adopt this baby. And some people might say, yeah, it was God, or some people might say it was my gut or the universe or an inner voice. I don't really care what a person calls it, but Josh, we probably all had those times in our life, and maybe it was the call and the feeling that we were to start, like to launch out, much like you did, to launch out into build your own business. We know that deep inside of us. And I knew that very first time of hearing the story and seeing the picture, I knew exactly what I was to do. I just did not know what I was getting myself in for.
Right. And so how does that connect with the next part of the business part of your story? Because is it this that kind of launched into the persuasion and the speaking area?
Here's what happened for me, Josh, and the answer is yes. And here's how I got there. And I'll skip all the little pieces leading up to it, but I was facing the situation where it was time to get the final document signed by a Haitian official. And at this time, President Aristide's government was collapsing. The detractors and the supporters were fighting with each other. I had landed in the middle of a civil war, Josh. I come from the suburbs. Like it was the first time in my life to have a gun pointed in my direction, or to have a machete held at my neck, or to have to jump in the back of a pickup truck and flee the city for my own safety. So all of these things were going on. It came to the point that the government totally shut down, and my Haitian attorney sent me an email and said this, Jeff, everything is shut down. At best, you really need to consider your adoption on a long-term hold. But at worst, you need to face the fact that your adoption might be over. And Josh, you have to understand at this point, this was no longer, I'd been there four or five times at this point, this was no longer about adopting a baby from Haiti. This was now about bringing my daughter home from Haiti. And here my attorney says, it's on hold, it may never move forward. So I fly to Haiti, within a couple of days. And my plan was this, Josh. Every day I was going to walk to this office that I need the document signed with my interpreter, just hoping maybe through some random circumstance, someone would pop in. So for two weeks, I did this, Josh. Every morning I got there optimistic, only to walk back disappointed at the end of the day that no one showed up. Until one day, Josh, someone showed up, an official showed up that could sign this document. Now, right. A little context, I didn't have very many people who speak English around me, so I didn't get my words out. You know I speak professionally. I had all these emotions. I had all of these words inside of me, and like I just exploded on this government official, and I said something kind of like this. I need you to sign my document. I need you to complete this. I need you to get this signed. I need to get out of here. I've got to get my daughter to the United States. I need you to sign this, and I need you to sign it now. And he looked at me and simply said no.
Right.
I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Josh, I had seconds here to turn this around. So here's what I did. I drew on the limited knowledge that I had of Haitian culture, and I knew how much they valued family. So I said something like this through my interpreter. I said, most likely you value family. And I get a nod yes out of him. Most likely, you know, you think that kids are wonderful. I get this other nod yes out of him. And I finally said something like this. And most likely you think that Haitian babies are jewels. And at this point, I know that we're connected, and I get his head shaking yes. I hand him the document, and I said, this piece of paper represents a little Haitian baby by the name of Jeannine. Jeannine doesn't have a home. She doesn't have any financial resources. She doesn't have any opportunities for education. She has no one to love her and take care of her. You can give her that life if you'll just sign this one document. Josh, within 10 minutes, the document was signed and I was on my way out of that office. And that was my first understanding of what I did up front when I tried to manipulate and make it about me and what I wanted him to do versus persuasion, where I began to understand him and what was important to him and find a way that we both move forward.
Wow. Jeff, I've never said this on the podcast before, but if that doesn't make for a Hollywood film, I don't know what does. I mean, I can picture that final scene right now. That story is unbelievable, and you can take some persuasion lessons out of that story. Absolutely. That's amazing. That's really incredible. So that explains so much, right? Because when you go through an experience like that, I mean, in so many ways, it has to affect you and kind of start. I'm sure, even just knowing you so briefly, that burned a fire, you know, in your stomach to, you know, do more than what you had just done there and realize the opportunity, not necessarily business opportunity, but opportunity to help others and the situation they're facing. So you get the paper signed. Where do we go from there? Or let's say you, is it a quick trip home from there? Did you stay or did you get out of there as quick as possible?
I left as quickly as possible. I didn't even have a flight. We went to the airport. We got something secured so I could get out of there and get back to the States with her. But it was this eye-opening. And Josh, I wish I could tell you that, you know, it was just like all of a sudden, like a bolt of lightning from heaven came down and struck me. And all of a sudden I became this new person. And I really, it really, really wasn't that. And I would not be truthful if I said it was. But what it was, Josh, was a journey. It was a beginning of understanding of what persuasion is all about and what manipulation is about. And I define manipulation this way. I'd say manipulation is to control or to influence a person or a situation, but to do it cleverly or to do it unfairly. So what happens in manipulation is like my first conversation with this official. We seek to move people, but we seek to do it for our own good and of our own benefit. Now, let's contrast that with persuasion. Persuasion is to call someone to do something through reasoning or argument. Now, I'm not talking about political or religious discussions with argument. I'm talking about people sharing ideas back and forth. And then we call someone to believe something, but especially after sustained effort and having provided sound reasoning for them. And here's a great tip that your entrepreneurs can walk away with. When I am negotiating a contract for my firm or for a speaking gig, I look for two magical words at the end of the conversation to know if I persuaded or I manipulated. And those two words are, that's right. Here's what I mean, Josh. When I hear that prospective client look back up at me and say, Jeff, that's right. You can solve this problem my company has. Jeff, your company is the right company to help take us to the next level. Jeff, you can solve this. You can fill this gap that we have here. Josh, at that point, they want it as much and maybe even more so than I want it. And at that point, I know then, right, that they're in, they want it for themselves. And I reached that point there where they want it and I want it, and we're both excited on this journey. That's not manipulating. That's not twisting an arm. And as your entrepreneurs are launching their companies and getting out there, when they're getting people that are to the point that they want you just as much as you want them, you've reached that place of persuasion.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's you can hear it in your voice, Jeff, just the passion and the energy around this. And I'm so excited to dig a little bit deeper. So you get home, and like you said, it's not a flick of a switch, right? It's not night and day. The journey takes time, but you have this successful business. And what happens next, and how does persuasion come into that picture? Is this a new business, a new venture? Are you just kind of merging it with your current business? What happens when you come home?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, what I combine here is my love of people, my background in communication, and this desire, like, not to just communicate, but to really move the needle and to make things happen. So these are all things that I work with clients, and that I help them with a strategy of how do we move the needle? How do we make things happen? And so for me, I decided that all of this work that I have done to help people go from hello to saying yes in relationships, which as entrepreneurs, we do that all day long. We basically wake up unemployed every day, and we have to keep building this every single day. What I decided to do is to take all this information and put it in the book, which is the new book that I launched back in February. And in the book, I walk through everything from the hello to yes, which includes like the messaging and how we capture people's attention, how we make a connection, and how we convince. And I walk through every single step that it takes to make that journey to them saying yes.
Right. And could you go into, maybe a few snippets,
Yeah.
three tips that you'd have for our listeners on how to improve in that area?
Absolutely. So when I'm on stage, I put this into a grouping of three C's, the letter C, and I'll hit all three of those quickly for your listeners. And again, I go in detail in the book, but at least this will help people understand the three main stages of persuasion. The first one is capture. Capture. So how do we get people's attention? And I break that down into three areas. And the first is around our messaging. And Josh, honestly, I think that this is where we, as business owners, where we miss it first is how we message and how we create message about ourselves and about the problem that we solve and what we do as entrepreneurs. So it's around the message. In the book, I walk through like four steps of creating this very simple message that your audience can buy, that your audience can get on board with. I talk some about capturing people's attention early. Now, this is extremely important if you have entrepreneurs that win people over digitally. They're in the digital space. We understand that people have very short attention spans. So how do you capture their attention early? And then the third part of this under the first heading of C of capture is sticky. Like, how do we create messages that we will remain with people an hour after we talk with them, a week, a month, a year? How do we remain top of mind to them? So that's the first C. is capture. The next C is connect. And from my perspective, building a connection with your audience is your secret sauce to persuasion. And I have three ways that we do that. First of all, is putting our focus on others and helping others find their win. You know, Zig Ziglar said it this way. So we'll get everything in life that we want if we just help enough other people get what they want. I think this begins with helping others. I would encourage your entrepreneurs to test and try something. I mean, how many times have we sat down in a sales meeting and the person that who is pitching, that is telling the story here, starts with how old their company is, how long they've been in business, how many employees, how many awards they have. And the prospective customers on the other side could care less about any of that. What they care about is their burning problem and what it is they need to have solved. So let's forget all that. Forget all the stuff about us, and let's just put it on them and our audience, our customers, our clients. It's just about them. It's only about them, and it's always about them. So helping others, how do we create a bond with our audience? And then the third part of connecting is the trust factor, which to me is one of the most important things, is how do we gain the trust of our audience? So that's capture, and that's connect. And the final C here is convince. Like, how do we then convince them? Once we have our messaging, everything's in place, we've got these relationships built, they're established, how do we convince? And in the book, I walk through three areas of how we position our message, how we craft a call to action that our users can't resist. And then the third part of this, which I think is probably extremely important to your audience and to your entrepreneurs here, is how do we become an industry expert in our space? Because I feel like this is a way to jumpstart. I don't like shortcuts. I don't believe in them. I think we have to put the work in. But this is a shortcut to help persuade people quickly if you're viewed as the industry leader, the go-to person in your space.
Right. Jeff, there was so much great stuff in that answer. I'm looking forward to re-listening to that part, and we'll have to check out the book too. Very cool. And so what does your business entail now? Obviously, you're a speaker and you've got the books and stuff. What's the kind of day-to-day like, or what I'm also interested in, since you got into persuasion and the speaking, how have you evolved since then, or how has your business evolved since then?
So I think one of the things, especially going into persuasive communication and really making that my specialty, my niche area, what's happened now is that people around know what it is that I do. So when there are things that come up, they think of me. For example, just yesterday, an elected official was speaking with a constituent. They had a matter they wanted to work on, and the elected official said, "Oh, you've got to talk to Jeff Tippett. He's the expert in this space. He's the go-to person in this space." That person called me that same day. I have an appointment booked tomorrow to talk with him. What it has done, it has really helped to define who I am and what I do. And I do all types of communication. Like, this is the sweet spot. This is what I do. So it's helped me define that and helped me to set myself apart from others who do similar type work.
Right. And can we go a little more specific into social media? It's so important, and you preach how important it is. And you know, you have works, you have books targeting that specifically. Could you give two or three tips to people? Maybe they're looking to get started. They have their idea. They have their business going. It's not going so well. Can you direct some of that persuasive advice or tips towards how to adapt that to social media, because it is so prevalent and I would say so important for almost any business out there?
Absolutely. So here's one of the cool things about my message, Josh. It's extremely generic in that a person could take the content from my book and it could help them do HR work, like attracting clients, right, top talent, like retaining. You can play to that. You can play it in leadership, leading your company, but also on the digital side of things, every single thing plays out as well. You can take all threes, and I think it plays out exactly like on social. How do you capture? How do you capture their attention early? How do you write a message that they will respond to? How do you resonate? How do you stay with them? Like, how do you build that connection with your audience? Like, how do you engage in the conversation, right? So that you have this dialogue going, so they know who you are and they like you. How do you convince? Like when you're putting your ask out there, like, how do you structure? Like, what language, what exact words do you use in your call to action? And I think that every post, everything that we do needs a call to action. If we have a meeting, if we have an email, everything needs to have a call to action. But how do we structure that call to action? How do we say it in such a way that they're going to respond to it as well? But again, too, I think that like being the industry expert, like the go-to person, also helps on the social side of things as well, so that people recognize who you are and that you are the, you know, you're the limelight person in that particular space.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Do you have, obviously your book would be an amazing resource, but Jeff, do you have any other suggestions for people who are completely new to even the idea of persuasion? You know, books, podcasts, or any other resources? Obviously, we'll include a link for sure to your book in the description of the podcast. But kind of any other resources you suggest or that helped you at the beginning?
So one of the things that I love books. I constantly want to consume books. One of the things that I found in my personal life, and this tip, you know, may play out well for your entrepreneurs as well. Like, I do have limited time. Like, there is a lot going on when I'm working and I'm a father as well, and I'm growing these companies and I've got a social life. I got all these things going on. At the same time, I want to be consuming information as well from great writers and people that are sharing their journey. So one thing that I've been doing for the past year that has totally changed my ability to grow as an entrepreneur, as a person, is using a service called Blinkist. And Blinkist allows me to get like the cliff notes, like we had when I was in high school. Like I would read cliff notes if I couldn't get through the whole book. What it is, it gives me within 15 minutes all the concepts within a book. And then I can choose if that's enough or if I want to actually get the book and go deeper into it and find out more about it. So for me, podcasts and books and digital books, audiobooks, like all of these are just part of that process of continuing to grow and evolve.
Right. That's very cool. I'm going to have to check that out. I haven't heard of it. And I'm a bit of a stickler for physical copies of books, but that's just such an efficient way to consume even more content. Yeah, go ahead.
And for me, like it's like sometimes like you might buy a book and then you get into it and you think, this might not have been the best choice for me. One of the things I love about Blinkist, it helps me decide, hey, do I want to dig in, go buy that book and get some more? Or did I get in 15 minutes, did I get what I want? Am I happy with this? And can I go to the next book?
Right, because you may not actually enjoy the book, but they might have three or four really helpful tips in there that would still be worth listening to in that format. So that makes a ton of sense. Jeff, I have two more questions. We could talk for hours, especially on the topic of persuasion. I love it. But to respect both of our times, we got to draw this to an end at some point. But I'm really curious to know, what are two or three of the biggest mistakes that you see entrepreneurs making in terms of their persuasion tactics or marketing efforts? And you know, how could they improve those?
First of all, I do believe this all begins with our message. So we typically miss it on messaging. We make things right. So extremely complicated. We forget the fact that most people read on a 7th to 8th grade level. And what happens oftentimes is we try to elevate the content and people don't look at that and say, oh my gosh, aren't they smart? They look at that and they're lost. They're not understanding. So we lose our audience. And oftentimes, right. And I do a lot of policy work. Policy is complicated. It's extremely complicated. And for the most part, people don't understand it. And I have to distill things down into bite-sized pieces that people can understand. Now, in our messaging, it isn't that we can't go deep. So I don't want people to think I'm saying, oh, just be surface level in this. When I teach in seminars, I talk about an inverted funnel. So in this inverted funnel, we give snippets of information that are designed to whet people's appetite for more information from you. I'll show how I play it out for me personally. When people say, Jeff, what do you do for a living? I don't go on for 5 minutes. I don't even do 30 seconds. I say, I speak professionally, and I stop. Josh, almost every time they come back and say, oh, Jeff, that's pretty cool. What do you speak about?
Right.
And then I'll tell them I speak on persuasive communication. They're like, oh, do you teach people how to manipulate for a living? And I just laugh, and we go deep. What's happened, Josh, is they bought into my message. They bought into my conversation, and they won it for themselves. So that's one. The second one that I will toss out to you is what we briefly touched on earlier. It's about them. Like if we change this away from our products, our goods, and our services, and all of the wonderful features of them, and make it about our audience and the things that they need, it will change it around. And you've asked a little bit about digital, so let me offer this. Many of us have email lists.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what happens though. We write our email for an email list and it's not as productive. It's not as successful. Turn this thing around. Quit writing to a list. Instead, pick out one person that on that list that you know of. Call her by name as you're working on a draft of this. Lisa, if it happens to be Lisa, write your marketing message as if you're talking to Lisa and only to Lisa. When people get mass emails, they know it's mass email. They don't feel like it's personal to them. Turn that thing around. Make it about your audience and make it directly to a single person, not a list. I think those are three things that can, if people just take those and start trying those, they'll turn their business around.
Right. Yeah, that's great stuff. Jeff, this has been just jam-packed with value. You have an amazing story to tell and the way it links in with your business and all these lessons, really amazing. Really appreciate you coming on, Jeff. Where can people find out more about you? We've heard about the book. You know, if you want to plug a website, the book title, I don't think we've mentioned the title.
The book is called Unleashing Your Superpower. Why persuasive communication is the only force you'll ever need. It's an Amazon. I'm very fortunate that we launched and we landed number one international book launch in 10 different categories, including wow. entrepreneurship. So I'm excited about that. My website is jefftippett.com, J-E-F-F-T-I-P-P-E-T-T. If people get anywhere close, I have Google ads on all kind of misspellings of my name. So my site will pop up for them. And you can sign up for my newsletter there. You can also find me on social media. I'd love to connect with your audience and carry on conversations through social media as well.
Awesome. Jeff, can't thank you enough for coming on. Really appreciate your time.
Josh, thank you for allowing me to be a guest. You have an amazing podcast, an amazing audience, and I'm just thankful that you trusted me to bring content to them. Thank you.
Awesome. We'll talk soon.
Hey everyone, Josh checking in. Just one more time, wanted to say thanks a lot for listening to the episode. Hope you got a lot of value out of it. And I wanted to see if you're interested in joining my email list. The link will be in the description of whatever podcast platform you're listening to this episode on, whether it be iTunes or Google Play or whatever. And what I do is I send out 3 emails a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, usually in the morning. And they're pretty short, usually around 300-400 words. And what I'm doing is sharing some extra thoughts, insights, ideas, struggles, lessons I've learned, because I am running my own service business too. And I love to share my thoughts, opinions, and just want to add some more value right to your inbox every week. So if you're interested, take a look at the sign up link in the podcast description on whatever you're listening this to on, and I hope to see you there.
And don't forget to endorse the podcast on whatpods.com. That's whatpods.com. And we'll see you in the next episode.